Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Off the Waivers podcast, where we discuss everything MLB and NBA related. I'm your host, James Andrews, joined by my co-host, Eric Barnes. Today we have for you a baseball podcast. This is going to be another baseball episode. We haven't done one of these in a couple of weeks since the NBA playoffs have been heating up, but we know you guys love the baseball content as well, so here we are with another one. Eric is joining me now. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's been a great Monday, and you know what? It's a great time to talk some baseball because a lot's going on and we've missed a lot, so we got to catch up.
It is. The weather's starting to get beautiful, and that means great baseball is being played. But we're going to start the afternoon with a little bit of a shakeup of a storyline, and that is the foreign substances that are being used by the pitchers all across baseball. This has been a phenomenon that's been going on pretty much ever since baseball was around, at least 100 years to my knowledge, where pitchers use things such as pine tar and other substances that they're not supposed to be using, and they do it to get a grip on the baseball so they can control it a little bit better. And MLB has official rules on the rule book against doing these things, but the thing was, for pretty much all of time, the hitters have never complained about it because their theory has always been, well, I want the pitcher to be able to control it because I don't want to get hit with the 100-mile-per-hour fastball. But some of the problem now is the pitchers are maybe mixing different substances, or it is a league-wide usage that is starting to lead to a lot of complaints. And there's been a lot of people taking to social media wondering why all this blatant cheating has been allowed to go on, because essentially that's what it is. Even if they've turned a blind eye to it, it is still cheating. So, Eric, what is your kind of initial reaction to the whole issue? And do you think there's a big problem here, or are people blowing it out of proportion?
I think that this has been a thing that's been happening for a while now and has been pretty much ignored. And the regulation of foreign substances that the pitchers have been using for a long time. My thoughts are that I feel like most pitchers these days are using some sort of substance or some sort of thing that is helping them with getting a grip or, improving their control. I think that it's kind of necessary to where the point's at, or where the game's at right now, maybe, but I think it's kind of at a cusp right now, where it might be pushing towards getting worse and getting to a position where maybe it is unfair. And I think that's why we've been starting to see all these discussions popping up and why people have had a lot of backlash to it. I'm necessarily not in the camp where I think it's a huge deal, but I feel like it's something that we should definitely be taking a focus at, or keeping our eyes at, because it's starting to really pick up this year and people are starting to really notice it with the high strikeouts being at an all-time high and then hitting being at a very low point throughout history. So I think that it might be something that's evolving into a bigger issue, but at the current state, I think it's kind of just the way it's been for a while and that people are just starting to take notice to it.
Yeah, this is something that the league is just now starting to bring to attention. So we're not really sure all the details and everything that's going on. So it's really going to be a waiting game throughout the rest of the season to really see what baseball thinks about this, what substances they're using, how it is affecting the baseball. And I think those are some of the key things you have to ask yourself, because there was a time where rosin wasn't allowed for pitchers to use. And then I think around the 1920s, they allowed them to use it they put it on the mound to regulate it because everybody was using it anyway, because the problem was on the hot summer days when all the pitchers were sweaty, they couldn't get a grip of the ball and the rosin would dry their hands a little bit so they could get a better grip on it. And that's usually what pitchers use pine tar for as well, but it's the kind of opposite case. They do it in the colder months like April or September or October so they can get a better grip on the ball when it's cold, because when it's cold, it's extremely hard to be able to snap off a good curveball and pitches like that. I think the big thing is what substances are they using and how does it affect the baseball? I think we've seen some people point out just obvious changes in pitcher spin rates, where right after Trevor Bauer tweeted about this whole issue where you can literally cheat and get away with it because the league won't do anything, we started to see an uptick of pitchers using it then. And so we started seeing guys with their spin rate's just starting to jump out of nowhere, which doesn't affect the velocity of the baseball, but it affects kind of how it moves to the plate. And that could be one reason why hitters are so thrown off. But again, this is really just a big issue now because of the lack of hitting this year and some of the changes they've made. They also changed the baseball this year. They got rid of the juiced baseball that they've been using the past few years. And they said they reverted back to the old one. But like we said several months ago at the beginning of the baseball season on this podcast, you can kind of never trust MLB's word on anything, especially when it comes to the makings of their baseball, because they do kind of tweak stuff depending on how the game is going. So I think that's another thing that could be affecting it, is if the new baseball is sleeker, the substances, whether it's Vaseline or something like that they're putting on there, could have a bigger effect.
Yeah, I think that, like you said, I think it's the combination of the low hitting and the change baseball is why we're really starting to see it being a issue. As in past, it didn't seem like it was as big a deal. And then players like Trevor Bauer, who are just, I think, is doing his best to like make this make players and other people more aware that this is going on, and this is kind of the normality of Major League Baseball and pitching. And I feel like it probably shouldn't be, but again, most people are doing it. And again, what you said, we don't know exactly what effect these substances are having on the ball or the pitches themselves. So until we can better know what the players are using and kind of like what's the league-wide spread of this stuff, you can't really have a good judge on it. Because at the end of the day, I think it's like, if it's just helping a player get a little bit of better grip, then I don't think it's that big of a deal. But like what you said, if it's increasing a player's spin rate, that's a major impact on hitters and trying to see the ball. So I think we're in a weird like point where they're starting to check for all this stuff. They're trying to monitor it, see what's happening on. And when we get more information, we'll be able to actually better like discern what the issue is and how big of a deal we should be making it.
Yeah, because The league just put out a notice several days ago saying that they were going to start to pay more attention to this issue and start to police it more. And since then, we've seen a few pitchers. I know Gerrit Cole is one in particular that has had a couple of bad starts, and his spin rate kind of dropped back down to where he used to be. So it is very suspicious looking, seeing that right after they put out that memo, someone's spin rate would just go back to normal, and then they would struggle, and they just didn't have that control that they seemingly had beforehand. So it definitely points to the fact that they could be cheating. But I think going forward, the league is probably going to regulate it somehow, especially like pine tar or something that they don't mind because it doesn't have as big of effect on the baseball. They can just put a little bit behind the mound each game, just like they do with the rosin. And they could even have like a temperature requirement too, like if it's under 60 degrees or something around there, then that's when they put it out for games, and anything over, they don't. But yeah, just kind of closing out on that issue. Again, the big thing is just them figuring out what's everything behind it and how much it actually is affecting it, whether or not it's something they need to take control of. But knowing MLB, they're going to want the scoring back up, because they know that home runs and high scoring games in general, they pretty much make TV ratings, and they make the game more interesting, and they make it more appealing to the younger fan, which is everything baseball's been trying to do.
And we've seen a lot of those this year as well, so it's not like there's been a huge lack of that. I think it's just the league-wide average has been the issue. So that's just kind of something to really look at and pay attention to in the upcoming weeks, see if there is a drop-off or a dip in a lot of pitchers' play and a lot of pitchers' performances as they start to crack down on that. So I think that's a very fair point to like really just pay attention, see if this is something that needs to be a bigger discussion than it is.
Mm-hmm. And moving on to our next topic, we're going to talk about a team that could probably use every advantage they could get right now, and that's the New York Yankees, who've lost their last four games straight, and they've lost 8 of their past 10. They were in good position to meet up with the Red Sox and then potentially take first place in that division just a couple of weeks ago, but the wheels seem to be falling off the tires here a little bit for the Yankees. They're 31-29 on the season, so they're 2 games above 500. Not really where they want to be. They're in fourth place in the division now, behind the Rays, the Red Sox, and the Blue Jays. And they've just had a ton of issues, everything from injuries to COVID-related issues with the team. Even though everybody in that organization is vaccinated, they still had a COVID breakout because the vaccines that they got weren't the greatest. So everything that could has gone wrong basically has gone wrong for this team. DJ LeMahieu has been especially a sore spot for the Yankees so far. He just hasn't been able to get it going. He only has a .253 average, and that was hitting somewhere around .340 the past 2 years combined after the Yankees gave him that big contract this past offseason. So he's someone that really needs to get it going, but the key thing has been their lineup the past few weeks. Their lineup just has been unable to win them any games. At their best days, they're putting up 4 or 5 runs. And then on so many other games, they're only putting up 1 or 2 runs. And the lineup just isn't doing enough for the pitching staff that's been trying their hardest, but hasn't also been the best this season. Do you think the Yankees are going to turn it around just based off the talent? Or do you think they need to start making some changes to shake things up?
As it currently stands, the only player that I trust in this Yankees lineup this season is Aaron Judge. He's the only guy that I've been able to see like consistency and production out of. Outside of that, I'm not sure I can trust anybody the way they've been playing. I think that there's a couple guys that you can really like think will turn it around. Like a Giancarlo Stanton always plays like this. He's has some good months and then he'll have like, huge slumps. DJ LeMahieu, I think, is a guy that it's kind of worrying to see his performance over the first 2 months of this season, but it's someone where his past performances you feel like will get back to the high level player that he was. But I mean, he is older, so hopefully this isn't a reoccurring thing and a thing that, you know, is just the impact of his older age and like him slowing down his career, because he's always been a great hitter, so it's kind of concerning to see that. Outside of that, though, I would think that this team probably needs to start looking at some possibilities for moves, because I don't like how the lineup's structured. I think that there's just too many guys that are just trying to go up there and swing for a home run every time, and there's not enough guys that are trying to get on base as their main priority or main goal. And I think that, you know, we should be looking around the league, and someone that I think would be a great target for the Yankees. Yankees fans seem to be set on someone like Trevor Story, but they should be looking more at the Rockies' rivals in that division. The Arizona Diamondbacks is a team to maybe look at some guys to get pick up from, because I think a David Peralta or a Ketel Marte would be really good, especially Ketel Marte, because he has versatility defensively to play in the outfield and the infield. But players like that who are more so worried about getting on base can really like table set for those big hitters that they have in that lineup, because I don't think they have enough of those. And especially with DJ LeMahieu, if he's hitting .250, .260, like that's not going to get the job done, especially when he's been their most consistent hitter recently. And then with the iffy pitching, this rotation hasn't been like, they're up and down. They're the Yankees. That's just how it's been for the past couple of years. So when that's like unreliable and you don't know what you're going to get from a day-to-day basis, and then the lineup is playing like at a league worst or at the bottom of the half of the league, I mean, you're not going to have a good roster. So I think they are a team that has really good pieces. Like everybody expects them to be good, but they need more table setters in that lineup. So I would, if I were them, I would be seriously considering some moves like a Ketel Marte.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's sort of exactly what they need. They do need table setters, guys that can get on base. Preferably a nice lefty outfield bat would fit perfectly in this lineup, because Clint Frazier has not been able to hit all season long. He's still hitting under .200. Brett Gardner's hitting under .200. We have Miguel Andujar in the outfield, and I don't care if he hits .500. Watching him play the outfield is just not fun to do, because he's a natural-born infielder who isn't that athletic in the first place. So he probably profiles as a future first baseman / DH, but right now we're desperate, so we have him out in left field because Aaron Hicks has been hurt all season. But if there's one good thing that's come out of this entire mess of the season for the Yankees, it's that people are finally realizing how good Aaron Judge is. He can just flat out hit the baseball, and he's always going to put up incredible stats. A lot of people have been starting to doubt him the past few years, and his injury concerns are valid, but he's been the best hitter on the Yankees for ever since he got called up to the league. It hasn't been DJ LeMahieu or Gary Sanchez or Luke Voit, who are hitters that people have been making arguments for that they are better than Judge at times when they get hot. But Judge has proven that he's the most consistent player on the Yankees, and he's a certified top 10 player in the MLB. But getting back to what the Yankees need to fix, I think they could also use an extra bullpen arm or two, because while they have Chapman and some other Chad Green, some other great late inning relievers, they just need more depth in that bullpen to try to help the starters out and bridge some gaps here. But it's just going to come down to getting healthy and just getting hitters back on track. And if they can't do that, like they kind of failed to do last year, then they're going to be sitting at home on the outside looking in when it comes October. And we're going to stay in the AL East here for our next topic, and we're going to talk about a guy who's been setting the baseball world on fire, and that is Vladdy Guerrero Jr. For the Toronto Blue Jays, has been making a case for the AL MVP this season. He is hitting, I believe, over 300 this season, with leading the league in OPS right now. He's been on an absolute tear for the Blue Jays, and some are calling him one of the most entertaining players in baseball as well. He's a guy who brings all the charisma that his dad did, and then some with the social media age. So what have you thought about Vladdy Guerrero? Is he one of your favorite players to watch, and do you think he has a legitimate shot at the American League MVP this year, despite being a very young player?
I'm really excited to see this development from Vladdy. At the beginning of the year, when we were doing our preview podcast, he was a guy that I thought was touted for a breakout. I'm glad to see that that is happening this year, because he's always been a crazy hitting talent. That's why he was the number one prospect when he was coming out. That's why he was dominating AAA, but he just hadn't been able to put together in his two MLB seasons. But this year, he's finally bringing it together, and he's not only a above average hitter, he is better than league average in OPS by over 100 points. He is at a 201 OPS right now, which is otherworldly. He's just absolutely dominating the game hitting wise at every facet. And I think he is one of the most entertaining players to watch. Obviously he's not going to have the web gems in the field as a first baseman, like a Tatis or an Acuna, but, he's like Juan Soto in a sense, where every time he comes up to the plate, I just have to watch. I have to see what he's going to do, because it seems like every other day he's hitting a bomb or two. And he's really been the life and heart of this Toronto Blue Jays team, this lineup that they have, where I think they could actually make serious moves, especially if he's going to play like an MVP caliber player that he is.
Yeah, I think he's certainly making a case for the AL MVP this year. And nobody else in the American League has really stood up and took it ever since Trout got injured. So I think the door is definitely open for Vladimir Guerrero to win it. And while he's, just because he does play first base, he's not going to be as electric or polarizing as a player like Ronald Acuna or Fernando Tatis, who play premium positions. But he's definitely becoming a must-see at-bat every time he steps up to the plate now, because, for one, he hits the ball so hard that it's just, it is electrifying for the rest of the team just watching the way he's able to hit balls 110, 150 miles per hour off the bat. And I believe he also leads the league in hits that are over 100 miles per hour off the bat, which is one of the most telling stats there, because anything over 100 miles off the bat is most likely going for a base hit unless it's hit right at somebody. I mean, he's been very good at the plate. He does need to get a little bit better in the field, because I've seen him make some errors at first base and just kind of some plays where you could tell he's still learning the position and doesn't have it quite down and isn't able to really help out his infielders on some of the mistakes they make. But I think that'll kind of come with time, and he's a hardworking young kid. And as long as he stays in shape, he's going to be a great player in baseball for a long time, just like his dad was. And I'm excited to see what the future can hold for him, because we saw in the Home Run Derby a couple of years ago, he can kind of do anything he puts his mind to. And he really is just built different from just about every other big league hitter right now.
I also really enjoy how he's able to command the plate and have his discipline go up this year, because he has almost jumped his walk rate percentage double than it was in the first two seasons of his career. So I think he's really made strides as a more patient hitter and looking for the pitches that he wants to hit. And like you said, his hard hit rating, his hard hit percentages ratings are just off the charts. He is a guy that you do not want to make a mistake pitch to, because he will punish you. It's really enjoyable to watch, and I'm really glad to see him breaking out, because I always thought he was a polarizing prospect. And I remember watching his very first MLB debut, coming home from school and turning on MLB Network just to watch this kid, and it was just so exciting, the energy that he brings when he's at the plate in the ballpark. It's kind of like his dad's in a sense. It's just like, this is a must-watch player, and he's starting to turn into that electrifying MVP player that everybody thought he would be. And that's just really exciting when someone like that, with all that hype, starts to pan out. So I think he's someone to really watch. I think he's very much one of the most entertaining players in baseball.
And switching it up to the National League now, we're going to take a look at the Central Division, because a few weeks ago when we left off, the Cardinals were almost running away with the division, and it didn't look like anybody was really going to be able to compete for that and maybe get a playoff spot as a wild card from that division. But recently, in the past couple of weeks, the Cubs and the Brewers have been playing much better baseball, and the Cardinals have been hit by some injuries, and they've had a tough time trying to compete. Their pitchers are already getting a little bit worn down from heavy usage as well. So the Cardinals, they've struggled. They've lost five straight now, and they sit a few games out of the division. It's still anybody's race out there in the Central. What are some things that you've seen out of the Cardinals that concern you, and do you think that they can right the ship sooner rather than later?
So for the Cardinals right now, watching most of their games, it's been a bit of a pain. They had some, I think it was started around the Padres road trip that they had when they were playing a bunch of games on national television in a row. They were the tied for the best record in baseball and held it by a half game for about a day or so with the Giants. And then it just all started unraveling. The bullpen started exploding more. Injuries on injuries started piling up. And now they're at a point where they have I think over 10 guys on the IL list, including four of their starting pitchers. And the pitching's already been unreliable outside of a couple starters and the back end bullpen guys, finding guys to fill those innings is just not worked. And I think that personally with that, combined with the fact that like players like Arenado and Goldschmidt have almost fallen off a cliff in the past couple weeks, versus where like Arenado was, cause he was one of the best hitters in May. Or like going into May, I think at some point in the middle there, he just started falling off in the past like 2 weeks. So for the Cardinals, I don't know what the long term, what the short term solution is. I think the long term solution might be to look to make some moves, because I think they're going to have to make some bullpen moves regardless this year to even be able to compete or be a contender. But with guys like Flaherty who are going to be out at least a month, it's going to be kind of hard to find those innings. So maybe this pushes up a move like a Max Scherzer, which has been something that's kind of been rumored, floated around. He's had last year's contract. He's old, probably won't be too expensive for the Cardinals to make a move there. And he's a guy from St. Louis. So I think that's a move that was kind of might have been on the table trade deadline, but might be something that the Cardinals maybe make a push for earlier to help this, help relieve this, the issues that they have. Cause right now they are free falling. And with the amount of injuries on this team, I don't see how they can turn it around anytime soon. So this might be a crucial moment for them this season. And it might lead to either a make or break move by the management in the front office.
That would certainly be a big swing if they were able to pull off a move to go get a guy like Scherzer. That would definitely change the dynamic in the NL Central, because right now I'm not sure if I really believe in any of those teams. The Cubs, they've been playing really well of late, and Chris Bryant has been leading that charge. He's looking like the MVP player that he once was. And also the Brewers right now, their starting pitching has just been absolutely dominant. They're a completely different team than the Brewers that went to the NLCS a few years ago that was just kind of all offensive oriented with a good bullpen. They still have that good bullpen highlighted by Josh Hader, but now their starting rotation is just one of the elites in baseball to go along with it. Do you think either one of those two teams is capable of running away with the division, or what do you expect for the future out of them, and what have you seen that's made them play so well to this point?
What I think I've seen this year so far play out is that everybody thought, including us, everybody thought the NL Central would probably be the worst division in the National League. And I think it's been a lot better than we've assumed. Because I think the NL East has kind of been what we expected the Central to be. Because the Central has a lot of good teams. Like the way the Brewers pitchers are playing, and they've been holding up and fighting for division, even though Christian Yelich hasn't been fully healthy all year and he's starting to get back now. I think it's kind of crazy. Like you look at players like Freddie Peralta, Brandon Woodruff, and Corbin Burns. Woodruff and Burns are both under two. Peralta's almost there for their season ERA, and like all the other stats indicating that they're pretty legit. So I think that like if you have like three guys like that, and you have the back end bullpens of a Devin Williams and a Josh Hader, like you're pitching stacked. They were so loaded in the bullpen that they made a move for Willy Adames already this year to try and help their shortstop, because they knew that Luis Urias wasn't going to be their long-term guy. So I think they are in a good position where they actually have a good team. It's really good defensively. They have great pitching. They can figure out their offense. They're a legit team and should be someone to watch for the division. Now the Cubs, I think the Cubs are a little different. They seem to be a team that just gotten really hot. And as you've mentioned, Chris Bryant's returned to MVP form, but I don't know if that's just a contract year motivation thing for him. Cause I personally saw the Cubs as I thought Chris Bryant would turn around this year, and I saw the Cubs would just be like a middling team and he would be trade bait. But I mean, he's become a valuable part of their team, and the way they're going, it seems like they're trying to have like one last ride with this group before it all gets torn down this offseason. So it'll be really interesting to see, because I think it's, we definitely have a three-team race if the Cardinals can figure it out. I don't think the Pirates, of course, are going to be there. The Reds have a really good offense, but their pitching is in shambles. Like, Luis Castillo, who's supposed to be the ace of the rotation, is just now getting his season ERA back down below 7. So I think that it's going to be the Brewers at the top, like near the top fighting in. The Cubs, they stay hot, and then the Cardinals can make some moves. I think we have a good division race here. I think this is something to really pay attention to.
Yeah, I definitely think 1-5, the NL Central has been a lot better than what people expected, and they're certainly not the worst division of baseball, which has been kind of something that's impacted the top. But I agree with you that I think the Cubs are just kind of a fad right now. Their team kind of got hot, and that's what vaulted them to the top of the standings. I don't know if they're really good enough to keep it going for the full season, but in the meantime, it kind of rejuvenated their fan base and put some energy back into them. And so, who knows, maybe they could even ride that energy through the end of the season and start believing again. But I think the Brewers, with that starting pitching, as long as they stay healthy, they're definitely going to compete, because if you have starting pitching that good, where you have three guys under a 2.5 ERA, and then all five of your starting pitchers have an ERA under 4, it's going to put you in position to win every single baseball game you play. So you're just going to come out with a bunch of wins no matter what. And for the Cardinals, I do think they'll bounce back and kind of keep it somewhat close. But I think the most important thing in this division is going to be who's going to beat up on the bottom two teams the most. You mentioned the Reds pitching has been in shambles, but yet they've been able to stay at a record around 500 because the middle of their lineup has been so good. They have the guys with the second and third best OPS in Major League Baseball behind Vladdy Guerrero and Nick Castellanos and Jesse Winker, who kind of came out of nowhere to really just put baseball on notice with how good those two have been. So I don't know if those two will be able to keep it up quite at the rates they're going, because they're playing at like a Mike Trout rate right now, which is pretty tough to do through a full season. Obviously, there's only one person that's capable of doing it in the league right now. But, and also the Pittsburgh Pirates have been 23-35 this season, which is not good by any marks, but people were saying that this Pirates team had a potential to be the worst team in Major League history, which so far they've been nowhere near that bad on the season, although they haven't been very good. So are any of these teams going to be able to beat up on them and win 8 or 9 straight games against the Pirates, or win 7 out of 9 against the Reds, and really put themselves in a better position than everybody else in the division? Because they've shown that while they're good quality playoff teams, maybe they're probably not going to go out and dominate other divisions with elite teams in it, especially like the National League West, when they have to play all of those teams. So I think it's the most important thing for all those three teams at the top, and what will probably determine the winner, is who has the best record against the Reds and the Pirates down the stretch of the season.
And that's what concerns me about the Cardinals right now, when you bring up you think they can turn it around, because they just lost 4 in a row to the Reds, and Jesse Winker just destroyed them. He, like, Castellanos wasn't that good in this series, but Jesse Winker had 4 home runs, including 3 just yesterday. So I think that, you know, the Reds and Castellanos and Winker are legit. They're the rest of the team. They're a whole team pretty much. I don't really trust, maybe Jonathan India, he seems to be really solid, but they have a lot of working pieces that they have to figure out with their lineup, which is why I don't think they're one of the competitors. But like you said, it's a team. Yeah, go ahead.
If only Joey Votto was still prime Joey Votto, that lineup would be insanely good, but he hasn't been that good for them this season.
Yeah, I think that, like you said, the division's just been way better than people have expected. The Pirates have been, like, even though, again, like you said, they're not good by any mean, but like for their standard and what people expected from this roster, they've been really good. And they've only had like a Key Brian Hayes for like 2 weeks this year. So I think that like players like Adam Frazier are really good. Maybe like trade bait guys for the Pirates, showing what their worth is, because I think that they have a lot of guys where they could probably make some play well and then sell some people off I think for the future, because I think they actually have some really good pieces. And then like I said, I think the Brewers are probably at the point of it as it is, even though they are behind the Cubs, they're probably the team to beat with that pitching staff. And then if the Cardinals can make some moves, turn it around, they might be right there. But that's all I think I have to say for the Central. I think it's really interesting to pay attention to and follow. It's going to be one of the more intriguing division races.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of the few divisions besides the National League West that has really three teams that could probably win it here. But we're going to move on, stay in the National League, and we're going to talk about the Francisco Lindor trade. While he's been playing better with the Mets, he is by no means living up to not only the contract they signed him, but also the trade package they had to trade away to the Cleveland Indians just to get him in the first place. Mets fans still aren't a big fan of him. They boo him a lot when he comes up to the plate, especially after a strikeout. They let him hear it. He's learning how tough New York is the hard way. Not everybody's built for it. Do you think Lindor is starting to break out of his slump? He's shown kind of signs of life, but some of his averages are so deep in the hole, he might not even be able to recover them this season. And similarly, two of the big-name shortstops the Mets traded away in that deal, Amed Rosario and Andrés Giménez, have been playing decent this season, but haven't been playing great either, although they were formerly touted as top prospects in baseball. So do you think there's any chance that the Indians actually won this trade in the short term and the long term from the Mets? Or do you think having a player of Francisco Lindor's nature still puts the Mets over the top on this deal?
I think right now it's a lot more even than we maybe thought or, you know, actually like conceived when the trade happened, because it seemed like you had to get rid of a Giménez. You were going to get rid of Rosario in this trade. It seemed like the Mets probably won because then they got Lindor and they immediately signed him to that big contract extension. But I mean, Amed Rosario stats wise is playing much better than Lindor is, not by a whole ton, but he's been playing much better than Lindor has been this year. Giménez hasn't, but I mean, he showed solid signs last year and he's still only 22. He doesn't have a whole lot of MLB experience yet. But he is past the prospect mark, I believe. But I mean, those guys are really good pieces to get back for Lindor. And I think they still are young and have a lot of potential. And I mean, Lindor's on a 6 or 7 game hitting streak where he's starting to turn it around. But like, he has been nothing like they advertised or expected him to be. So maybe the Mets still win this because they have them locked up long term. And, you know, they get to sell all those Lindor trade jerseys. But I think that right now the Indians might have won this trade. I wouldn't say it's a fleecing because obviously anytime you lose Francisco Lindor, your franchise loses a lot. But he hasn't really sit or fit in right with the Mets team and the Mets organization just yet. And he's going to be there a long time, so hopefully he turns it around for him. But right now, Amed Rosario looks like a better shortstop than Francisco Lindor. And I mean, it's only been 2 months, but I mean, I'm sure that's not what either team expected.
Yeah, that is a scary thought for the Mets after they handed him a 10-year, $341 million contract immediately after they traded him. Didn't even wait to see how he would turn out in New York before just handing out that huge contract to him. And I think it's a huge win for the Indians, who have still been able to be pretty good this year despite not having him on the roster, kind of in a similar spot to where they were last year, because they always have new arms they can bring up. Pitching is kind of what propels that team anyway, and they've never been known for their hitting. And so just having a guy like Amed Rosario just playing solid baseball this year helps the Indians a lot more than he could help some other teams who don't really need just a solid piece, because they either need a big piece or they just need a lot of pitching. The Indians have a very good way of building their team, so any offensive contribution they get back in this deal is a good thing for them, because Francisco Lindor was coming up on his contract here and there's no way the Indians would have been able to afford a deal like this. So I'm pretty sure they're extremely stoked that they didn't even bother signing him to a semi-major deal like that one to try to keep him in Cleveland for the foreseeable future. But I still think there's a lot of time left with the Mets. I don't think he's going to be a total shamble with them. Eventually he's going to have to kick it into gear. Of course, we've talked about it this whole time. There are so many hitters right now that are just completely down in baseball. A lot of it is random. It's some young guys are coming up and aren't capable of hitting, and there's a lot of veterans who have very good track records and very impressive stats on the back of their baseball cards, but they're just not hitting well right now either. So I still think it's all going to even out next couple of months or so, in June and July especially. We'll get to really see what these hitters are made of as the weather starts warming up even more and the ball's flying out of stadiums a lot better. So I do think that the Indians are a lot closer to winning this deal than the Mets are. And if Francisco Lindor never kind of figures it out and reverts back to the player he used to be, this is going to be a bad, bad deal for the Mets, one that we'll laugh about for decades to come.
I mean, I think it's just funny because I don't expect him to stay where he's at hitting-wise for the future. But, I mean, to see it right now, it's pretty funny to kind of like laugh about, just because it would be such a Mets thing to do, right? Like to think you're getting this big player signed to that massive deal, and then he's just kind of averageable, average his entire time as a Met. I mean, it would obviously suck for them, and I'm sure they're not happy about it now, but they thought they could escape the curse of being the Mets in New York, but it's kind of backfired so far. So hopefully, you know, I mean, he can turn it around, because, you know, Francisco Lindor is just a great player. And, you know, when he's good, the rest of baseball is a lot better. So hopefully he turns it around. But for now, it's just fun to see, because, like, the stats don't lie. Like, he's not been good, and he's not been the player that's worth over almost $30 million or over $30 million a year. So hopefully that gets figured out or settled. I mean, yeah, like you said, if you're the Indians right now, you're probably a little ecstatic.
Yeah, that is a very Mets thing to do, which is why it definitely would be hilarious. And I think the thing that makes it even worse on Lindor right now is how well the Mets are doing, actually. They're 29-23. They're 3.5 games above the Braves right now, who are in second place, and they're a game under 500. So the Mets have really been doing well this season. Some people had different expectations for them. I didn't really expect them to be too much over the 500 points. They've kind of exceeded my expectations. But the problem is, if Lindor was playing really well right now, like an elite player in baseball like we know him to be, the Mets could potentially be like 6 or 7 games up in this division right now, and they would have a very good grip on it going into the summer months of the MLB season. But right now, at 3.5 games, it only takes 1 week where the Braves get hot and the Mets go cold, and then boom, they're tied for first place again. I mean, their pitching has been phenomenal this season with Stroman, DeGrom, and some of the other guys they have in the rotation. I mean, DeGrom has a 0.62 ERA, and as far as we know, Jacob DeGrom hasn't been using any substances that's helped him. He's just been that good this season. So you got to give him the credit. And so basically, if the Mets were maybe like a 4th or 5th place team like they normally were, Lindor probably wouldn't be getting as many boos. It would just be the team in general. And it would just kind of be the same old thing. Oh, the Mets stink this year. But the Mets have a very good position to go to the playoffs right now and win their division. And if Francisco Lindor doesn't improve, he is going to have a rough time come October when he's playing a playoff game in Citi Field.
I mean, anytime you have a pitcher in DeGrom who is having arguably, like, is on pace for having arguably the greatest pitching season ever, I hope you're in a good spot and have a chance to compete as the Mets are. So, I mean, hopefully, as you know, we hit the summer months, it starts to warm up and the ball starts to fly more. That'll help Lindor find those gaps and get on base more and just be the complete player that the Mets know he can be and why they traded for him. So, I mean, that's just kind of how it is. I think that the Mets offense has always been the issue, and that, I mean, trying to trade for Lindor is to help boost it and bolster it, but it hasn't fully happened yet, especially with a lot of other guys like Pete Alonso. Pete Alonso has not been the same guy he was since that first year, but I don't think anyone expected him to be, because that first year was just monstrous. But I mean, some of those guys can really like get to form in the summer months. Like, they could be dangerous. I don't see why they can't be. Again, like I said, when you have DeGrom, who is gonna just, you know, get a great outing every single time out, almost, it seems like, and he's just that dominant, he's at a whole nother level right now. I think there's no reason why. So you really have to think about that. I think the Lindor trade has not been the splash the Mets expected it was going to be. But hopefully it turns around for their sake of, you know, their playoff race.
But you say you would expect the Mets to be good when you have a pitcher in DeGrom having a historic season, and he absolutely is on pace for the greatest pitching season ever in baseball. But his win-loss record is only 5-2 in 9 games started, with also 2 no decisions. They just can't give him any run support. There's no reason with a 0.62 ERA, which means you're giving up less than a run per 9 innings you're pitching. If you're giving up less than a run, how are you losing games? Like, the Mets need to give him some run support eventually. And you definitely hit the nail on the head with Pete Alonso. He had a great first or second season in the MLB, but ever since, he's kind of taken on the Pablo Sandoval diet, and he just looks a little bit more out of shape each season, and each season his bat just slows down a little bit more. So I'm not sure how much of a hard worker he actually is, if he's just kind of really struggling to stay on top of his craft like this after he had a breakout season and looked to be one of the better middle of the order bats in baseball. Yet, not that we expected him to stay at quite that elite level, but the fact that he's fallen off to not even being a formidable first baseman for the Mets is kind of just wraps up how the Mets go. Either they have hitting or they have pitching. They never have both.
I mean, it's not out of the ordinary when DeGrom, one of his Cy Young years, he went 10-9. So I think that's to be expected at this point. I don't think it's his fault. And I think a lot of people realize that it's been the offense this entire time. So they just have to figure that out. And hopefully, again, it works out for them because they do have a good roster on paper. They just, it's not, you know, all clicking right now.
And we're closing in on about 45 minutes here. So that'll just about do us for this podcast. Do you want to get in your oof of the week real quick?
Yeah, a little quick oof of the week. I mean, it'd be easy to just give it off to the Cardinals bullpen because, you know, they've just been oof left and right. You know, it's been, oh, you have a lead. We're going to make that worse. Or, you know, we're trying to win a game. And we'll give it them. We'll give it to them. Like, just yesterday, they came back from 7-0 just to in the bottom of the ninth, bring in their closer and have Jesse Winker hit his third home run of the day. So I think that that's an easy oof, but the oof, we got to take some responsibility around here. The oof is on us because we have not been doing enough MLB content for the past month or so. So I think we have to take the oof. There'll be more MLB content coming further on in the next couple of weeks that we've been missing on recently. So that's our bad. But, you know, we'll take the oof. We'll take the L this week and we'll move on.
Man, I didn't expect to be on the oof of the week myself. But we do apologize for not keeping up with baseball as much since the NBA playoffs started. That's kind of been consuming most of my time and my energy. I've been going towards watching those games and keeping up with that because there's been a lot of great action going on in the NBA. But that doesn't mean there's not a lot going on in the MLB. And so we're going to continue to bring bi-weekly episodes just like this so everyone can stay on top of it and be ready for those later couple of months, the end of the season stretch, where everything really starts to get exciting and we see which races are going to be the ones to watch later in the season towards the end. But for now, I think that's just going to just about do us. Follow us on our social medias. Feel free to reach out, comment, talk to us, ask us a question, and we might address it on our podcast right here. Our Twitter is at the OTW pod, and our TikTok is just off the waivers. So that's going to do it for us today. Everyone, go get some sunshine. Enjoy the day. And it's going to be peace out from us.